From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Here we are back on another Thursday night to talk about board games, card games, electronic games, mind games, toilet games. Wow. All other sorts of games. It's the Dice Men Cometh at Edge Radio 99.3 FM. I'm Mark.
I'm Garth.
Toilet games.
And you're Leon.
Toilet games?
Yeah.
Yes, I'm Leon.
Well done, Leon. And now, Leon.
Yes.
I owe you a bit of an apology, Leon.
Yes.
Because last time you were on the show, and even last time you weren't on the show, I was a little bit rude to you, I must admit.
A little bit. It was fine by me, not necessarily the wife.
Yeah, though. I'm sort of, I'm so used to being rude to that other person who used to be on the show, whose name almost said. I can't help it. So, look, here's what I've decided, Leon.
Yes.
Since I've been getting these nasty letters in the post cut out of magazines and things, I'm not going to be nasty to you anymore.
That sounds lovely.
Okay.
Yeah. Put your pants back on, Mark. Put your pants back on.
So, Leon, look, before we get into things, have you been up to much lately, Leon? What have you been doing?
I've been sick as a dog playing Fallout 4.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's what I've been doing.
Oh.
That doesn't sound particularly social, does it?
No, it doesn't, actually. Anyway, never mind. Look, did we say episode 93? Did we say 19th of November?
You did now.
Excellent. Then let's go to a track and come back and talk about games. Oh, before we do, what's going to happen on this show, Garth?
There we go. He got there, Leon. He finally got there. Oh, memory. So, yeah, we are going to talk about what we've been playing this week. Old Sick as a Dog Fallout 4 Leon is going to try and have done a bit of research because there was a little world championships in our hobby that happened recently. Mm. So he's going to sort of regale us with his half-assed knowledge of the Fantasy Flight World Championships. Mark, you've also done a bit of an interview.
I have.
From our friendly correspondents who were lucky enough to go to Essen. And then we might mention our competition. How about we do that? And then we'll get to some music straight now.
Let's do all that and more when we come back. Wasn't that so lovely? A cover of Björk's Hyper Ballad by Australian band Big Heavy Stuff. You're with Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh with Mark and Garth. Leon, wake up.
I'm awake. Sorry, it's dragging me in here for that beautiful song.
It's only amazing. The nasty messages from your wife that stopped me from being nasty to you, okay? So buck up, son. Anyway, here we are.
Buck up, son.
Buck up, son.
Wow.
Well, that's what you get for calling me dad in the car, you young whippersnapper.
Come on, let's talk about what we know best.
What have we been playing lately? We won't ask Leon.
Yeah, what have you lads been playing?
Oh my goodness, what have we been playing? We have been living the dream. Awesome. We have been art gallery curators. And I know, personally, Leon, that is something you are aspiring to.
Oh, I do love art. It's all up on the wall and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. That's the kind of insight you don't get on the Dice Tower, that's for sure.
Sometimes it's not on the wall. Hey.
All right, so here we go. So we've been playing The Gallerist by one of our favourite designers, and I know, Mark, you really like his games, Vital Lacerda, Portuguese game designer, who has designed Kanban, depending on your pronunciation, which is the automotive game of basically trying to produce cars.
Won the first game of that I ever played.
Yeah, well done. That was great. He's also done CO2, which we played about 15% of a game. Sure, it's great, but it just wasn't the right time or place. And then he's also designed Vinyos, which is a wine-making game, which is, again, in his very much Euro style. So he's also got a couple of really good games that are coming out. The big one is called Lisboa, which is basically about it's his Portuguese heritage and about Lisbon coming together again after a massive earthquake in 1755.
Wow.
So it's by Vital. It's published by Eagle Griffin Games and it's only just come out this year via Kickstarter. I do want to mention straight off the bat, that this also has an Australian connection because
Aussie.
There is a hell of a lot of art in this game, not surprisingly, because it is about an art gallery. And a lot of the art was done by a West Australian guy called Ian O'Toole. And he's done quite a lot of work. He was an artist in the second edition of Study of Emerald by Martin Wallace. He's also helped out on some of the Alien Frontiers Outer Belt expansions. And then he's also going to be the artist for the upcoming Vital Games Lisboa and also the Vinyos Deluxe edition. So there's a bit of a, I don't know, muse thing going on with Vital and Ian, maybe?
Fantastic.
They've obviously found each other and it was meant to be. However, this game is from 1 to 4 players. It does offer a solo mode, Mark, for you. it says that it plays in about 30 minutes per player. Now, let's just say we maybe tapped out at an hour and a bit per player.
When now, you say a bit, you mean close to 2 hours, don't you?
Well, no, per player.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. Yeah,
yeah, no, because we started maybe at 9:30 at night and we finished approaching 3 a.m. in the morning.
That's right.
That's always been a way of saying, oh, a certain amount per player is a good way of saying, we don't really know, to be honest.
No, yeah, but look, immediately we have to sort of say, yeah, we were drinking as we were going. It was a learning game. We're a little bit stupid. But more importantly, what is this game about? It is, and I'll read this straight from the rule book.
Yeah.
The age of art and capitalism has created a need for a new occupation, the gallerist. Combining the elements of an art dealer, museum curator, and artist's manager, you are about to take on that job.
Wow.
You will promote and nurture artists, buy, display, and sell their art, and build and exert your international influence. As a result, you will achieve the respect needed to draw visitors to your gallery from all over the world. There's a lot of work to be done, though, but don't worry. You can hire assistants to help you. There's a long queue of unemployed art aficionados lined up, hoping to work with someone of your stature. Build your fortune by running the most lucrative gallery ever. Now, I don't know. I like Euro games, but a game that's about running an art gallery maybe isn't the most exciting theme to me straight away. However, when you look at this game, it is expletive, absolutely gorgeous. Don't you reckon, Mark?
This game to look at on the table, and we did tweet a couple of pictures and post them on Facebook because it looks amazing. Like there's a lot going on, but the graphic design and the artwork on this thing is freaking amazing.
Exactly. Now, I was lucky enough to back this because, you know, I'd had a really couple of good experiences with previous Vital games, and I backed at about an $80 Australian level, which is what you pay for a lot of normal games that you buy in your friendly local game store. This game would be lucky to be selling for anything less than $120, $140, yeah, I reckon, retail. It's amazing. Is massive. It weighs the better part of 3.5 to 4 kilos. It's about the size of, what, an A3 bit of paper on the top?
The box that came in, you could have shipped probably a couple of small children in that box.
Exactly. Legally or illegally.
Yeah, not that I'm promoting shipping small children in boxes.
But no, so let's get to the crunch of it. What do you do in this game? So it is a Euro worker placement game. Players are going to be discovering artists. You're going to be commissioning them to create works of art and invest in them so that you make more money. Because ultimately, at the end of the game, it's all about who has the most money. You're going to buy your works of art, put them in your gallery to exhibit. You're going to sell them for money. You're going to hire your assistants. And then you're also going to put your workers out on the international market, which is essentially access to some special abilities. Plus, you're also going to be able to participate in an auction at the end of the game where you are bidding for some masterpieces, some really top-notch works of art that are going to be really worth a lot of money. Now, all you've got to do, there are only 4 possible spots that you can go on this board, and that's what makes it really interesting because listen to the last couple of minutes of me rambling on, and it sounds like there is a lot going on. But ultimately, on your turn, you're just going to be placing your gallerist pawn in one of 4 potential spots. That's all there are. There are only 4 potential spots. And in each of those spots, you've got 2 potential actions. So,
and the other thing is if you're already in one of those 4 spots, you can then only go to the 3. So you can't go back to where you were. So cutting your options down even more.
Exactly, which sounds really simple. And that's where, after we went through the rules explanation, which admittedly took about sort of 30, 40 minutes or so, because we wanted to make sure we understood what was going on. When we got to play this game, it did flow really quite quickly, considering we were taking a lot of time to play this game, because the actions you can do, you can go to your artist's colony, and at that location, you can either discover a new artist, of which there are going to be 8 available in the game. One starts discovered. If you go there, you get to discover them, you get to reveal what the artist is, you get to get what their starting fame is. Starting fame will eventually lead to influence and therefore how much money their artworks are going to sell. Otherwise, you can just go and buy a piece of art from the artist and put it into your gallery, which is also a pretty good thing, because you'll then hope that your artist will increase in fame, therefore you will have bought low and sold high, which is the ultimate goal. Otherwise, you can go to the sales office, which is another location, where you can take a contract, which is... a contract is essentially you are then able to sell a piece of art to an interested party. So there are 4 types of art. You've got digital art, you've got photography, you've got sculpture, and you've got traditional painting. So there's only ever 4 styles of art. So you go to the sales office, you can collect one of those contracts, or you can, if you've already got a contract, go and sell one of those pieces of art for some of that money, because... money's pretty hard to come by.
It was, yes.
Yeah, now money's very, very useful. Not surprisingly, because it is the end of game, absolutely finite. You have the most money, you win. But it's also, you'll use that to buy a lot of art. You'll use that to buy some assistance, which is really important. And it just comes in very, very handy throughout the game. Third location you go to is the media centre, and this is where you get extra assistance, and you're very nice because you're taking them from the unemployment queue.
Yes.
So not only are you helping yourself, you're also getting those people away from welfare, and I think that's kind of important.
That's what capitalists do, don't we?
Yeah, exactly right. So essentially, you go to the media centre, you can buy some assistance. Otherwise, you can go to the media centre and promote your artist. So, thematically, you're getting them on radio, you're putting them on TV, you might be putting them on a poster that you're strapping around a telegraph pole somewhere, depending on, you know, how much promotion money you want to put in there. But essentially, what you're doing thematically is you're raising the value of all the artworks that they do, therefore hoping that you can sell their piece of art for a nice, tidy profit. Now, the last place you can go to is the international market. Now, what you're going to be doing when you're going there is... sending one of your assistants, and what you sort of, I guess what you're trying to do is basically getting a special ability. You're getting a one-off special ability on the international market to earn more money or earn more reputation or try and get some more end of game scoring abilities. The other thing you do there is you are contributing to the auction of these 3 pieces of art at the end of the game, which are masterpieces. Mm. They are big end of game scoring conditions, where the only way you get them is if you've put assistance in that little international auction, and essentially it's simple. Whoever's bid the most gets the first masterpiece of art.
Yeah, and look, let's jump right here and say the easels that these 3 masterpieces sit on, like they perform no function except holding these 3 masterpieces for the whole game for you to bid on the end. But man, they look awesome.
They do.
And they just add so much to the flavour and the theme of the game.
Yeah, look, this game, I just can't begin to explain the rules properly. There's plenty of videos to do that. I watched about an hour and a half of Rado going it just to get a bit of a feel for it. But it looks amazing. Now, I know, Mark, you're a big fan of art and when games look really good on the table. But the board is massive. All the pieces are massive. The cardboard is super thick. The quality is just impeccable. And all of that counts because the game ultimately is fantastic.
Look, for graphic design, for component quality, for art, this game has got a score like 75 out of 10. It's just... one of, if not the best, presented game that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And you know, take aside the gameplay, which I loved, and we'll talk about that more in a minute, but just the presentation of this game is totally amazing.
Yeah, I agree. And look, I tip my hat to Eagle Griffin Games, who published this. They cop a lot of flack in social media because they don't discount their games. So they set the recommended retail prices and saying, nah, you're not allowed to discount them. But when you get a game of this quality... I'm more than happy to spend the money because I know this game's going to be able to be played for year after year after year, and it's going to look pretty much as well as it did on day one. The box is just perfectly designed for all the cards. It fit the Kickstarter stretch goals that came in perfectly as well. It's, yeah, what do you say? It's wonderful.
This game was epic. I mean, to look at it, you sort of thought, oh, it's going to be complicated and clunky. It plays really smoothly.
Yeah, it does.
Got a comment about the the guide, I think it was, that Vital himself had put together to help explain the game at Essen. And you use that to explain the game, which I thought made it really simple. You almost just had to read it, but you obviously you're pointing out bits on the board and other cards and stuff. That game explanation itself could have gone over an hour, but with that guide, it was 30, 40 minutes.
Yep.
And I really felt like mostly I knew what was going on.
Yeah, and look, Vital has been incredibly active, particularly on the Board Game Geek forums, just to be able to explain it, because it does look overwhelming when you put it down on the table. I set it up a couple of times just to make sure I had everything organized before I actually brought it out on the table officially. So he's done a wonderful job, and obviously part of what he learned from Essen is this is how I explain it in a really short amount of time to get people playing the game rather than just sitting there wondering.
Yes.
Now, the gameplay itself, it's one of those games that really, I guess, ramps up at a really decent pace, because at the very first couple of turns, there's so few things you can do because you've only got $10, you haven't got any art in your gallery, so all you're trying to do is more than likely earn a bit more money or buy some art and then start promoting an artist. So the things you do are really quite basic.
Yeah, that's right. It's very few choices to make at the start, and then it opens up as it goes, and then you start to get a feel for, oh, I see, I buy this, I pump it up a bit, I sell it, I get more money so I can buy a better one, I pump that up a bit, and then the real challenge comes of, oh, so I'm not just buying and selling art, though. I'm also running a gallery, so I've got to have some art in the gallery, or it's just I'm showcasing blank walls. But then I spend all this effort and bump these guys up, but then I want to keep some stuff in my gallery. So the fact of bumping it up then doesn't, the benefit of bumping it up doesn't come until the end of the game. And that was the dilemma of buy low, sell high, or buy low and hold and hope towards the end that it's worth it. And you don't really know.
No, you don't. And there's another thing, because each artist, when you buy a piece of art, they can only ever have two pieces of art at any one time. So if you're then going to be increasing some of your artist's work, you're also going to be increasing the value from one of the other players as well. So there's another thing we haven't really mentioned, which are the little visitor meeples. Now, they come in three different colours. You've got brown ones, who are your investors. You've got your VIPs, who are nice and pink. And then you've got your collectors, who are white. Now, they play a really important role as well, because when you buy pieces of art, you get more of them going to the plaza, which is this sort of central meeple collection area, where if you do certain, I guess, have certain goes, you get to move them into your gallery. You will also spend them when you are selling pieces of art. Thematically, you might have an investor who is in your gallery, you sell a piece of art, you have to move them back because they've bought the piece of art. You've also got tickets, which allow you to move people in and out of your gallery, which is, again, thematically really great. And those tickets, they're, again, massive, thick, chunky cardboard. They're also one of the timing mechanics on the game. Look, we could probably talk about this for the rest of the hour, and I know we're probably rabbiting on a bit, but I just want to get this to the table again.
Yeah, look, I loved it so much. Look, I can't let it go without saying, of course, I won. But again, it was one of those games where, looking around the table, I actually thought I was coming last.
Yep.
Although I felt it was quite even. You know, Carl had masses of money in front of him, but wasn't maybe doing a lot with it. Trent sort of had a good pile of art that he'd sold. You had a good, I thought you had a really good balance. And I was like, oh, I seem not to be doing anything. And then I bumped up some people to celebrities, made their work masterpieces, had it in my gallery still. And that got me over the line by Trent on by 1 or 2 points.
Yeah, there was only a couple of points.
It was so close. And I can't wait to play this again. I mean, hopefully next time it won't take us the, 6 hours or whatever it took. Hopefully it'll only take maybe three. But hats off. Didn't feel like 6 hours. It felt like about 2 hours.
Well, that's
like
the thing.
We
there
had
was,
a ball.
There was no downtime. And that's the great thing is because you sit there and you go, I can do this or this or this. Never at one point are you just sitting there twiddling your thumbs.
Yeah.
And look, I think it was a great way to spend 6 hours.
Yeah.
And 3 a.m. in the morning, it was weary. But everyone was so excited to get to it. It wasn't like, let's just plow through this. It was a great adventure.
Oh, so highly recommended. Mm. Now, Leon, have you played any Vital Lacerda?
No, but just quickly on that, I was quite interested. You said you hire the assistants from the unemployment queue?
Yeah.
Well, for any artist that I've ever known in my life, surely they're hanging out in very similar queues.
They are, but that's why we raise them up. We make them celebrities. So. Okay.
And the second thing, you might have forgot this, even though that was very extensive. What's the battle system like?
There's no VATs in the Gallerist.
Well, then what's the point? No, that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, like look,
it sounds very similar to Tricarion, which I'm waiting on, which sounds almost identical, except where you're playing as a magician and his sidekicks, as opposed to an artist.
Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to play that. I was almost a back, and then I saw Leon backed it, so I knew I didn't have to.
Yes.
So, Leon, what have you been playing?
I've been playing Fallout 4, which is a video game that most people listening to this probably don't want to know about.
Well, no, basically, I'm pretty sure that no one bothered with that. You must have been like one of the one or two people.
I mean, it was me and like 12 million other people, something to that effect. But it is absolutely amazing. And that's pretty much all I've been doing because I've been a bit under the weather and haven't got out much except for today to be here.
Mm-hmm.
No worries. Well, let's come back and talk about Essen.
Wow. That was Daft Punk with Derezzed, also but from the Tron soundtrack. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3.
Tron Legacy. Not related to Pandemic Legacy.
No.
Which we are going to break out later tonight.
I know. Yeah, I took a little peek inside all the packets. You guys are in for a surprise.
Hey, look, here's the thing, actually. I might post this on the Facebook page, but I'd really like to know, do people want us to talk about it? Or do you... want us to not give away any spoilers? I don't know if we'll be able to talk about it without spoiling because it's so spoilerific.
Exactly. But let's talk about that after.
Yeah.
You play that little button, which is about our interview with Terry and Merrin, who were lucky enough to go to Essen this year.
So joining me tonight on The Dice Men Cometh, I have the great pleasure of talking with Terry and Merrin Furness. Now, you might remember them. They were the couple that got engaged via cards from a board game. Terry and Merrin, how are you going?
Good, thanks, mate. Great to hear from you again.
Hey there, Mark.
Now, you two have obviously just had a very exciting holiday, which also doubled as your honeymoon. Where did you go?
We went to Europe, and in amongst our trip, we went to Essenspiel in Germany, which was very, very cool.
Fantastic, although not your usual honeymoon destination, is it?
Well, I don't know. I've never honeymooned before.
If you're looking for board games, I can't think of too many better places to go.
Yes, very good point. Now, obviously you had a bit of a holiday on the way over, but the main thing we want to talk to you about tonight is Essen. So, firstly, were there many other Australians at Essen?
We tripped over some guys from the games capital.
So a couple of local Canberra guys.
There was a guy who used to game with us in Canberra who's now moved to Germany who was there that we caught up with. So
one of the guys from Melbourne who runs MeepleCon as well.
Yep, he was there. So that was most of the Australians that we saw.
Okay, and what about Australian designers? Did you see any Australian designers?
I don't think we did run into it. We actually went looking to see if we could find Peter Hawes, but I don't think he was there this year. Phil Walker-Harding, I didn't see around. I don't think he was there. Probably the closest we came was Martin Wallace. That's Eastern Australia, isn't it?
New Zealand.
Yes, that's right. We'll claim him as one of ours anyway, just like Russell Crowe.
Yeah.
What's your first impression when you arrive at the Essenspiel? Tell us all about it.
So the first bit that was exciting was realising how many people were going there. We went from our hotel, we could go down onto the underground and there were people pushing people onto the trains. In Germany, their trains are a little bit more structured than they are in Australia, so they have a sort of arrival time and a leaving time. And we had a couple of times around Spiel where the conductors would get quite cranky because people weren't on the trains enough. So they were kind of crammed in sardine style. There was lots of people, just bigger than anything we've got in Australia that we've seen. It was pretty impressive.
The halls are gigantic. You hear that the place is huge, but it doesn't really prepare you for just how big it is. But interestingly enough, we were fortunate enough to get a bit of a preview. We sort of went to scope it out the day before it opened and just having a look around and, you know, looking through the fence, looking through the bars at the goodness that would ensure. And a guy came over and said, oh, you're trying to get in. You need to go over to that door. So we walked over that door and security guard says, oh, where, which hall are you setting up in? And Mary goes, oh, I can't remember, Tess, is it one or two? I said, oh, no idea. He said, I'll just go in, you'll find it.
So, yes, so we went in the day before and scouted around. And my very law-abiding husband was quite uncomfortable with the idea that we were there and we weren't supposed to be there. And,
that's true.
And I was running around taking photos and we saw Z Garcia from the Dice Tower, so we had a chat to him and went around and
donated some money
because they weren't allowed to sell any games, so we donated some money and in return we were gifted a game. That was really lovely. First game of the con, so we bought the new Richard Brees game, Inhabit the Earth.
Yep.
And we wandered around and then we started chatting to the
Surprise Stare games which is guys who do Snowdonia and a few of those things. And so we spent about an hour helping them pack their Snowdonia expansion, which made me feel a lot better about being in there day before. So after that, I felt quite comfortable just walking around and checking out and having a chat to everybody.
Because we'd helped set up.
That's right.
There's little air quotes happening here. So it was just amazing, but it also gave us a sense of where everything was. And it's just, as Terry said, it's enormous. It was just incredible.
Yeah, and their version of a math trade is interesting as well. Everyone just goes to a certain location and holds up signs of their BGG username. So you've got 100+ people just sort of milling around trying to find the picture of the BGG username that they're looking for to swap games.
Because it's a multilingual environment. I took photos of it. It's just insane. It's almost like the board game library at CanCon. Just imagine half of that completely filled with people with bags of games and signs, and they're all yelling out their username, and it was a little bit like a cattle auction.
Sounds amazing. To get an idea, to give us an idea of the size, have you been to somewhere in Australia that's perhaps of a similar size to one of the halls?
The Sydney Convention Centre, when they open up the base area, that would be as big as one of the halls.
And then how many halls were there at Essen?
So they used hall 1, 2, 3, and 7. So
and the gallery are in the middle.
Yeah, the gallery in the middle. So number one's the biggest by a significant margin. You could probably fit 2 and 3 inside hall 1. And 7 was sort of the new one this year, I think. But, yeah, look, they use it for great big motor shows and that sort of stuff. And I guess the easy way to say is that they talk about 160,000 people being there over the 4 days. So if you think 40,000 people a day, there was a lot of people there, but at the same time we could easily enough, walk through the halls and stuff. So, yeah, very large.
Now, obviously, the really exciting stuff. Give us a rundown of some of the your favourite designers that you met and chatted with.
Marin will sort of run through all our pictures in a minute, but I guess the big one for us was the opportunity to meet all the guys from CGE who helped me out with my proposal to Marin and stuff. So, we caught up with them on a number of occasions, which was awesome because we hadn't met any of them, obviously. Vladimir Suchi, he apparently is usually pretty gruff and apparently got a little bit emotional about the whole thing.
He doesn't speak a word of English, not even hello, goodbye, nothing. So there was some translations happening there and he was, it was just lovely to meet him and to meet Vlada Shvatil, who's Terry's favourite designer.
That was really lovely being able to catch up with those guys and we sort of signed some of the cards for them and they got all their guys, signed some of the cards for us as well so that we can sort of frame them or do something with it. So that was one of the big things that we wanted to do. But the other notable one for me, as I said before, we sort of sat with the Surprise Stare game guys and helped them sort of set up a little bit before the show. And we went back and demoed a game or so with them and met Tony Boydell, who's a lovely bloke.
Terry's saying that both because it's true and also because it turns out they share a birthday. But I got to meet Stefan Feld, which was very cool.
And when she says meet, she means stalk for about 15 minutes until, he stepped out of a place where she could grab him.
Well, he was playing a game in the non-English-speaking area because he's not an English speaker. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I did. I sat and pretended to play a game in German that, I don't read German. So I did that until he was free and then went, hi. But we met Bruno Cathala and Richard Brees. Freedom and Freeze, who's just kind of wandering around. We met the Dice Tower guys, so Tom Bassel and Eric Summer and Z Garcia. Yeah, who else did we meet, Tez?
We met the guy who designed Antarctica.
Charles.
Charles Chalet.
Yep.
We saw Ignacy Trezorik. If you can pronounce his name, you're a better man than I am. Christian, who did Tides of Time, we met him as well.
He was cool.
He taught us the game. Marion won, so I'm not a big fan of him.
I think that was sort of the main designer.
A few others here and there. Like we met the guy who did Russian Railroads and also some of the more 18XX type stuff.
Ted Allspatch. He is an enormous human being. So Terry's 5'11" and just came to his shoulder. So I only just came to his shoulder.
Sounds like you met almost every designer there.
Well, it's interesting because then you come back and go, I forgot about him. Matt Leacock. Oh, I'm sure we saw him walk by at some point and didn't grab him more. But I think we got a good start to the collection and clearly we need to go back to finish.
Yeah, I think we've definitely got to go back.
I was going to ask you that about your plans for next year because I hear it's a bit addictive.
It is. It won't be next year.
Yeah, if we're a little bit closer, I'd be a very happy and frequent visitor. It's 4 days and we were lucky enough to get a little bit more, but 4 days just goes so fast. You could very easily spend 10 or 15 days there and be quite happy, I think. And I was a little bit surprised as well because I've always heard around Essen that it's more around the release and the sort of exposure of games that you're not necessarily going to get a lot of games in. It might be hard to pick up a game, but we found it quite easy. If people are wondering about whether to go to Essen or not because is language going to be an issue or will we actually get any gaming done? I'd allay those fears. We had no problems getting games. We played one game that was a German version. That was just because we were walking past and they said, "You want to join us?" And, they were quite happy in terms of explaining all the words to us. But the majority, you'd sit down and say, "Can you explain in English?" And I'd ask the other people that are sitting at the table if they were happy for that. And we didn't have a single occasion where people weren't happy to play in English. So that was really good.
Terry, I've got to ask you, did you get to play a game of your favourite game, Dungeon Lords, with Vlada Hvartel?
Mate, I didn't. I've got to say, we didn't actually stop at the CGE booth to play any games because I guess the time we were there, we were more interested in just chatting with them and getting to know them a little bit. And I was always going to buy their games, so there wasn't anything to actually try and work out whether I wanted them or not. And so it was more, enjoy the time with them and then go and try all the other games.
Well, that's probably a good thing because we don't need to get any better at that game, that's for sure.
Right, well, that was the first half of our interview there with our Essen correspondents. We're going to have a little song now and then kick straight back into that interview. I was sleeping gently.
And that was Lou Reed with New York Phone Conversations. Speaking of phone conversations, let's have the second half of that interview.
So tell us then, what was the hotness? What are the latest games that were just going berserk there?
So, look, it's hard to say because the place is so big. To try and get a sense of what's happening around the halls, I guess your best bet, and we sort of went past a few times, was to go past the BGG booth and sort of see what was on the hotness. And based on that, like Seven Wonders Jewel was certainly one that was very popular. Like I think we ended up going past there on the Saturday or something, and any of the promo sort of versions and that they'd sold out of. 504 was a big one, and Codenames. They were probably the top three for the show, I think. I think it was a real quality crop this year. There was a lot of really good games. I think we probably lucked out there in terms of picking a year to go because, some of the games we played we really enjoyed. We actually just bought Shakespeare and demoed it on the Sunday night with Sasha and the guys. That was a really nice game. Signore from What's Your Game. Mombasa from R&R Games, that was really good. Quite enjoyed that. Obviously the CGE crop.
We got a chance to, one of the other things that was very cool was we got a chance to play some games that then decided us against them. So, for example, Burano was one of the games that had quite a bit of hotness to it. And there's a bit of buzz around it. We went and played it and decided that it was way too bitty and there was just too much downtime for what it was. So that was a handy save of quite a bit of money. that I've currently spent on other games. So
yes, yes. We had this idea that we'd take two big suitcases and when we're at Essen, we'd put all of our clothes into one and fill the other one with games. And suitcases aren't actually that big.
Yes.
Your volume, you have volume issues to weight issue. It's not weight that's a problem. So we end up throwing a few into some boxes and send them home, which was an interesting story in itself. But, I guess if when in Essen, enjoy the moment and buy a few games.
Yeah, I think there's some lessons that we learn. One is don't fly out straight out the next morning. Give yourself some time to go to the post office because we shipped games back. But I think next time we might be a bit more likely to ship boxes, like just the empty boxes back and take the innards with us in our case and in our carry-on because boxes are light and they seem to do shipping from Germany by weight rather than by dimension. So I think that's one of the things we'd learn for next time because you could fit a lot more games in for the weight without the space of the boxes. That was a good learning for us. Yeah, and I think next time we'd probably just buy more maybe, which is why we won't be going next year. We'll have to wait a little bit and save some more money.
Now, one of the other exciting things, obviously you met another couple that were inspired by your story to do their own board game proposal. Do you want to tell us about that one?
It was actually an interesting story. So we met Tony Boydell, who's the designer of Snowdonia and also Guildhall's that we think we're
Guilds
hitting.
Of London.
Guilds of London, sorry. That'll be hitting Kickstarter, I think, this year or early next year. And we got to play a game of that too. That was really interesting. Anyway, we told him our story and he said, oh, wow, you should totally go and see Schmooze over at Taiwan Board Games. Because he's got a pretty cool story too. And we're like, okay, cool. So we toddled on over and sort of introduced ourselves and they sort of did, oh, my gosh, it was the geek list that Terry wrote about the proposal that inspired them. So they actually used Agricola. So they had Agricola cards made up. The lass is a graphic designer, so she actually made up a booklet. They got hold of like the wood cushions and they made up little cardboard pieces that you use as houses in Agricola. They had giant ones those made up. So in this little booklet that they made, they've got them standing on those and doing that sort of, family growth and the whole thing from the game in this little booklet. It was very, very cool.
There wasn't any actual pictures of family growth.
That would have been inappropriate. But it was very clever how much effort they'd gone to. And they were so it was kind of cool because they were really excited to meet us because, yeah, they worked Terry and Vladimir had done and Philip from CGE inspired them. So we got a photo of the four of us all holding up our own cards. So that was very cool.
Now, that's a fantastic story. Now, hubris has me asking, of course, what's the word on the street in Essen about the Dice Men Cometh?
So we did spread the word while we were over there. We were having a chat with Beth and her husband, John, and
BGG.
From BGG. Yeah. And she made the comment that the most annoying thing about her husband is he's forever taking back his turn. So we gifted them a Take Backsy card.
We just happened to have some Take Backsy Dice Men Cometh cards. And so we decided that now better to get the word out than to provide one of the BGG ladies who does all the interviews with a Dice Men Cometh Take Backsy card.
Yeah. So, and they thought that was very clearly one of the coolest things that they had seen.
Interesting enough, Mark, was it John?
Yeah.
John, who we gave his card, he just decided that he'd just drop his pants, run around the table twice, get 26 credits, and then just play like normal.
Well, we haven't seen the photos hit the Gmail inbox yet, so we look forward to that one. Thank you so much for spreading the word, though. It's great. Look, any parting thoughts on Essen before we let you go?
Yeah, you have to go. It was just, for a lover of board games, it was just amazing. And to be in the position to bring home that hotness instead of sitting at home waiting for it to arrive with one of the local retailers was very cool. And we were way more popular than we normally are.
And the wonderful thing about Essen as well, it sort of shows our hobby, how friendly people are. I don't think we came across a single person, designer, who wasn't happy to give you a bit of their time and just say hello. Now obviously they're there to try and promote their games and that, but everyone there, including people who are visiting, just really friendly. So that was lovely. And look, even as well as the board game side, there's another side of Essen that has comics and art and all that sort of stuff, which, you know, people who are into board games usually have other complementary geeky habits. So, you know, that was even just walking through those parts of the halls was quite interesting. But, look, as Maren said, if you can get there, get there. It's certainly worth the experience.
Fantastic. Look, thank you so much. Now, before we also let you go, some of our listeners may have heard Maren before talking about CanCon. Now, both of you heavily involved with that convention. So tell us about the upcoming CanCon in 2016.
So CanCon, for those of you, or for the listeners who aren't aware, is held in the Australia Day Long Weekend in Canberra. It's one of Australia's largest tabletop gaming conventions, so there's lots of different gaming. But from a board game perspective, we've got a board game library that has some of the new hotness from Essen in it. This year, our board game library has expanded by approximately a third. So for those who for the last couple of years have been witness to the growth of the board game library, will appreciate that there's some extra space.
Yeah, so we'll have room for around 320 people, so plenty of room. And obviously, as always, we'll have quite a bit of the new Essen hotness. So, you know, we'll have copies of Mombasa, Ships, Prequels Club, New Through the Ages, Codenames,
Antarctica.
So look, plenty of new games people come along and try to see if they want to take the plunge.
And the other thing we're looking at doing is working with one of the local kids games retailers to do some demos of kids games and start looking at the next generation and what's available for them and helping bring families into the hobby. So that'll be cool too.
We'll definitely get back in touch with you guys as we get closer to CanCon to let the listeners know more about that. But look, thank you so much for taking the time tonight to chat with me about Essen. It's been fantastic to hear it firsthand. Sounds so exciting. I'd love to get there one day. Happy birthday for the other day, Terry.
Thank you, mate.
And you guys take care. We'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you. Take care.
Yeah, so that was Mark's chat with Terry and Maren, who were very, very lucky to have their honeymoon in Essen. What a cool couple. Now, I just want to reiterate, CanCon is going to be on in January next year. There's a setup day starting on Friday the 22nd. You've then got Saturday, Sunday and Monday full of gaming goodness. You've also got Australia Day if you want to get a bit more gaming thrown in. So if you are interested, check out the CanCon website. Just type CanCon into Google and I'm sure you'll find it. Now, secondly, I just wanted to make mention of a little competition we are running. Really short and sharp. All we want to do is get more likes onto our Facebook page. For every new like that we get between now and the end of next week's show, so you've got basically a week, you are in the winning.
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.